In May of 2017, Rachel Williams went on the trip of a lifetime. She was a photo editor for Vanity Fair, which didn't pay a ton, but it put her into contact with a lot of those New York socialites that sometimes you see in the tabloids. But this time she got to go on a trip where only the 1% get to go. It was a resort that catered to them, private spa treatments, high-end dinners, the kinds of amenities that people like you and I, we never get to see. She went there on an all-expenses-paid trip with her friend, Anna Delvey. And she had made quite the splash in the New York socialite scene. You see, Anna was known for going around town and tipping people with $100 bills. She would have these lavish dinners and then pick up the check. She carried herself with an air of superiority and entitlement that just screamed old money. So when they're on their trip, and there was a problem with her credit cards, Anna assured everyone she had the money. She could wire transfer if they needed, but the resort needed something on file, and Rachel Williams didn't think twice. She handed over her cards, her corporate card. She knew Anna was good for it. They finished their trip. She got back home, and she saw that $62,000 had been charged to her cards. She thought there must be a mistake. She tried to reach out to Anna, and suddenly that relationship went very cold. Anna would never pay Rachel Williams back a dime of that money. You see, Anna Delvey was not actually Anna Delvey. Her real name was Anna Sorokin. And she had spent some time as a kid in Germany, but she was not the German heiress she claimed to be. She was actually born in a small town in Russia. And there was no family money. It was all an act. She would fund her lavish lifestyle by taking out big loans, by running up credit cards and lines of credit, and taking advantage of people just like Rachel Williams. Well, later that year, it caught up with her. In 2017, she was arrested on all kinds of counts of larceny. And it took that world by storm. Because those people, they prided themselves on seeing the 1%, on knowing who those people truly were. And there she was, right in their midst. And they didn't even realize it was all an act. You see, appearances can be deceiving. And Samuel, he felt deceived. If you remember your Old Testament history, there was a time where Israel was ruled by what's called judges. Remember people like Gideon and Jephthah and Samson? Well, Samuel was the last of the judges. And the people came to Samuel and they wanted a king, and God gave them a king. And the king God gave them was a guy named Saul. And Saul just looked the part. He was a head taller than everybody else. If you remember the story, when he's kind of revealed to the people of Israel as their king, he's hiding amongst the supplies. He seems humble. There's even a time where he prophesies. Saul looked to Samuel to be every inch the king. But it was all an act. And very quickly, that became very evident to Samuel. You see, Saul was fine having God around as long as God's will matched with his will. But as soon as God's will and his will split paths, well, Saul would strike off on his own every time. He treated God like he was a prop, like a political ally he could just shake hands with, flash a smile to, and get favors out of. But God will not be your prop. He rejected Saul as king. And when we meet him in 1 Samuel 16, Samuel's in mourning. All of Israel is living beneath a reign of terror. You can see fear all over this account. But more than just being afraid, Samuel perhaps feels ashamed, duped. He's certainly angry. Angry at Saul. It sounds like maybe a little angry at God over how this whole thing turned out. But God finds Samuel in the middle of his pity party. And he calls him to go and anoint the next king, the one that God had chosen. Because while sometimes you and I can be fooled by appearances, God never is. I read about that in 1 Samuel 16. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you mourn for Saul, since I've rejected him as king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I'm sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I've chosen one of his sons to be king." But Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears about it, he'll kill me." The Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I've come to sacrifice to the Lord.' Invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what to do. You are to anoint for me the one I indicate." Samuel did what the Lord said. When he arrived at Bethlehem, the elders of the town trembled when they met him. They asked, "Do you come in peace?" Samuel replied, "Yes, in peace I've come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come to the sacrifice with me." Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. When they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord." Samuel picks himself up, and he goes to anoint the next king of Israel, as he had already done for Saul. But this time his journey takes him to a small town called Bethlehem, to a house of a man named Jesse, who is from the family of Ruth and Boaz. And Jesse has all of his sons prayed by. And Samuel sees Eliab, and he looks like you think a king should look. He is impressed. He is almost duped again. Isn't that funny? You see, appearances are so deceiving that even after you've just been deceived, you'll be deceived again. But God reminds us, he looks at something different. But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I've rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Then Jesse called Abinadab and had him pass in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, "The Lord has not chosen this one either." Jesse then had Shammah pass by. But Samuel said, "Nor has the Lord chosen this one." Jesse had seven of his sons pass before Samuel. But Samuel said to him, "The Lord has not chosen these." So he asked Jesse, "Are these all the sons you have?" "They're still the youngest," Jesse answered. "He's tending the sheep." Samuel said, "Send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives." So he sent for him and had him brought in. He was glowing with health and had a fine appearance and handsome features. Then the Lord said, "Rise and anoint him. This is the one." So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. Samuel then went to Ramah. The next king would not be Eliab. It would not be Abinadab. It would not be Shammah. The one God had chosen was one of Jesse's sons who held such low esteem in the family, Jesse didn't even think to call him to meet their honored guest. But God reminds us of something here. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. You see, appearances are deceiving, but not to God. For us, that's all we've got to go on. The more experience you get, the more you learn how to read people, the more maybe you can kind of read between the lines and maybe get an idea of what you think people are up to. But at the end of the day, no matter how smart I may think I am, no matter how much experience I think I have, I cannot read your mind, I cannot read your heart. But God, he does not have that problem. He sees everything right down to its core. He knows about everything we do behind closed doors. He knows about every conversation we have behind someone's back. He knows everything we do, and more than that, he knows exactly why we do it, to a level even we don't. He sees all. He knows all. And that means you can fool me, and you can fool yourselves, but you cannot fool God. And if you think that you're going to base a relationship with him based upon appearances, it's headed for disaster. That will not work. And yet, It's amazing how often that's what happens. You think about the story of Saul. Saul is trying to con God. He treats God like he's a prop, like somebody he can just kind of keep in his back pocket when he needs a favor. Just kind of keep him happy by going to church once in a while, saying the right things. And then when he needs something out of him, then he can get that. When he doesn't need anything, he can set him aside again. But God will not be your prop. You cannot use him. That's why Saul was rejected as king. It wasn't honest. God won't play pretend. Because he knows. He knows when this hour we spend with God in worship is completely different than every hour of the week. He knows when there's some parts of the Bible that we like because they're convenient or comforting. And when there's other parts we don't like and we just set it aside, even if we don't tell another soul, he knows. He knows when this is just checking a box so you can present a certain appearance. He knows and sees behind all of our excuses and our rationalizations. He sees all we do. He knows all we say. He knows every thought. And what's more, he knows exactly why. If we're going to have any kind of relationship with God, it's got to go past appearances. It cannot be pretend. Do you know what the answer is? It's not found in giving this up. And it is a strange line of logic to me, but it's one I've heard more than once. Someone realizes that maybe this hour they spend with God in worship is completely different than what they do the rest of the week, and so they give this hour up. They'll say, at least I'm not a hypocrite. But that is silly. If you're living a lie, you don't give up the only thing that's true. You know what the answer is? It's just dropping the act. It's just being honest. David wrote these words in Psalm 19, and I've always liked these passages. He says, but who can discern their errors? Forgive my hidden faults. Keep your servant also from willful sins. May they not rule over me. Then I'll be blameless, innocent of great transgression. David isn't playing pretend. Wouldn't it be nice if we could say that the only times we sin, it's an accident? It's not true. There are times where we pursue sin and we chase it. David knows that God knows that. And he just lays it before him. He doesn't pretend. But he also knows there are times where we sin and we're not even aware of it. He understands not just why we think what we think or what we say, but why we think it and why we say it to a way that you and I can never begin to understand. So what does he say? Forgive me for my hidden errors, because I can't even understand myself. He just lays the whole thing out before God. But he does it with perfect trust in God's forgiveness and his mercy. Do you know what you call that? You call that a man after the Lord's own heart. And that heart was not David's because there was something different about him. He was not that way because he had some indelible character or was above temptation. You see, a part of this series this summer is you're going to have a chance to read along with the life of David. And you can find those readings on the app and the weekly email and in the information center as you leave. And if you read along and you see the life of David, you're going to see a guy who is flawed, a guy who struggles, who could be faithful one moment and an adulterer the next, who could be a poor father and a poor husband, who sometimes is so courageous, other times so cowardly. You'll see a king who could be so kind one moment and then violent and hot-tempered the next. You're going to see someone just like us. And David knew that. In Psalm 51, David wrote, surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. And he didn't write that at the beginning of his life before he did all this stuff. He wrote this after he fell into sin with Bathsheba. Because this was always his problem, just like it's always been ours. David was not a man after the Lord's own heart because of David. It wasn't because of some character that only he had. It wasn't because he was a perfect guy. David was a man after the Lord's own heart because God chose him, because of who God is. And God found him the same way God found you, and he worked in David something brand new. How many times have you prayed this prayer of David from that same psalm, Psalm 51, just a few verses later? Create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. You see, God saw the truth about David. He saw all his failings, all of his shortcomings, but he saw something else. A price that was paid for them when his son Jesus went to the cross. When he looked at David, he saw what he sees when he looks at you, a perfect life that covers up all of our shortcomings and makes us all that God has demanded. That life of Jesus has been credited to you through faith, given to you through word and sacrament. When he looks at us, he sees in our heart the same thing he saw in David, a pure heart. And he uses the word create for a reason, because he had nothing to work with. But he brought life from death and made us brand new. Appearances are deceiving, which makes them powerful. In 2019, Anna Sorokin was being sentenced for her crimes. Do you know what she was doing at exactly the same time? She was inking a deal with Netflix to make a movie about her. It was called Inventing Anna. Maybe you saw it. It was pretty successful. She made a lot of money. She went to prison, she got out, and she got a spot on Dancing with the Stars. She did the podcast circuit. She even got her own show for a while. Everybody knew it was an act. But she is a master at recreating your image. And I don't know her. And I don't know how much is true and how much is real, but I know this. Appearances can be deceiving, and they are powerful. And I got to tell you, at least for me personally, that's been a hard lesson to learn as an adult. I would love to believe that people can see past the act, that they'll really see good intentions, they'll understand things as they are. But at the end of the day, I know at least for me, appearances are all I really have to go on. I cannot read your hearts and your minds. But isn't it great to know that when it comes to you and your God, it is not based on appearances. It's based on something real. A choice that God made from eternity to make you his own. And the power of the waters of baptism, or the power of his word, where he created in you that pure heart that he created in David so many years earlier. That he sent his son to cover you in a perfect life. He lived in your place and remove all of your faults. You see, appearances are deceiving. And God is not deceived. But know this, when he looks at you, he sees your faults for sure. But he also sees Jesus' perfect life and the heart in you that he created. Amen.
Thanks for listening to Emmanuel's Sermon Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about Emmanuel, you can follow us on Facebook or visit us at imluth.org. That's immluth.org. Have a great day.